Blog Talk Radio.
Todd is back. Episode of the next great show right here on Blog Talk Radio. We're going to be talking with Devin Kerr today. He's a former and lead analyst for the USL Championship. He's done some work for ESPN and many other media avenues that carry not just U.S. soccer, but soccer around the world as well. So he has just called in, and we will get him on the line right now. We're going to have a great show today. Devin, how are you?
How are we doing, brother? Yeah, I'm here. How are we doing, brother?
Great. I'm good. Thank you so much, Devin, for appearing on the show today. And the question I always love to kick off every interview with, when did your love of the beautiful game begin?
Oof. I mean, I guess I should thank my mother for bouncing a soccer ball off her stomach when I was in the womb. Yeah, it's a question I get all the time. My earliest memories of the world's game, the beautiful game, as you referenced it, goes all the way back to 1987. I was 3 years old. It was my first soccer team. I still have the jersey, believe it or not. I played
really?
For a team called the Colts. Absolutely, yeah. And I was in Waxahachie, Texas. I'm born and raised in Nebraska, but we had about an 18-month stint where my parents, because of work, had jumped the border, gone down to Texas. And that was my first soccer team, and I'll never forget it. I remember always wanted to be like my brother. And then from there, I started chasing the dream, played pro a couple years, retired, got a new career, and then stumbled into broadcasting a few years back, but never lost the love, always kind of followed the sport in so many different facets, whether it be in England, United States, Germany, you name it. I can't get enough of it.
Same here. It's funny you mention that, because my mother actually, her and my father had been cleaning out the basement in their home and found my soccer jersey from, I guess, middle school. I'd played on the school team, you know, where you could just sign up and play. And she kept it all these years. I thought I'd, you know, thrown it away many years ago, but she found that. So as soon as I can, I'm going to put that bad boy in a frame. That's going to be part of the wall art in my office. So tell us about your pro career. When did that begin?
So I left college early. I was originally supposed to attend University of South Florida when John Hackworth was the head coach there. I had a club connection. My head coach at the club level was his assistant. He ended up taking a national team job. And from there, the next 3 years or 2.5 to 3 years of my life became a scramble where I ended up not going to USF because when Hackworth left, most of the coaching staff left. New coach came in. Rescinded all the offers, and so I ended up at Stetson University. I was there for about a year and a half. Great school, just wasn't the right fit for me. You know, I had to make a last-second decision due to the timing of Hackworth's departure. When that happened and I went to Stetson, it was just a free fall of realized that college soccer at that school wasn't for me, not exactly sure what I wanted to do, contemplating even giving the game up. At about the age of 20, 21, got a phone call from a friend who played on the national team. We chatted back and forth, and he said, "Man, like, what are you doing? Get it together. You know, you may never come play with me, but you know that you have too much talent. You should try and play." And so I took his advice, and I just started training more. Bounced around on a bunch of semi-pro stuff in South Florida, like the Miami, Fort Lauderdale, West Palm Beach type area. It is a hotbed of soccer, and so I bounced around some of that stuff, adult leagues as well, and I ended up with getting a couple reps with some coaches that I had known at the younger age group that had professional careers on their own that were tied into the MLS circuit and the USL circuit. And back then, you know, USL, USL Pro is very different than what USL is nowadays. So I ended up basically bouncing as a squad player from Chivas USA, Seattle Sounders, pre-MLS, the 2008-2009, and Pittsburgh Riverhounds. I was offered contracts multiple places. I turned down Pittsburgh and Red Bull actually offered me a developmental contract for their reserve team. But I mean, a developmental contract in 2007 paid $12,400. So that wasn't very much money, especially when you're living in the New York area, right?
So
I said no to that. Pittsburgh, it was a climate thing. I wasn't interested you know, the trial and everything that we went through was, at that point in time, the Riverhounds were playing and training, I should say, at UPMC, which is University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, just off the river. And I didn't want to go from a snowy environment into, you know, a turf field, a bubble there. And it wasn't an interest of mine. So that's when I left and went out to Seattle. Brian Schmetzer was fantastic to me. I loved my time there with him, although brief. You know, they were more interested in me turning into an outside back. I didn't see that. I personally still don't see that. But look, they probably knew better than me. Look at what he's been able to do with the Sounders. Of course, Goff Lagerwey has stepped in there now. Chivas USA was where I ended up, and I thought that's where my home was going to be when Preki was the coach. The problem I ran into was during my trial, things were going very well. A lot of good talk. Actually did my ankle very bad, and that was kind of the start of my body breaking down. I turned down two other contract offers. It doesn't matter where it came from because I turned them down to go overseas. I had a trial opportunity with a team in the fourth division of Germany in the Regionalliga North called Altona 93. It's Altona Nannenbreisig, and they're basically a suburb out of Hamburg. Went over, trained really well, played really well, got signed, loved it. Still probably some of the most favorite times of my life living there. And then I got the opportunity to go to HSV, went there to Hamburg, and was there for about 6 months, got hurt, knee injury. That was in the late fall of 2009. So I was probably, at that point in time, I'm 25. So I'd been on the pro circuit chasing dreams and doing that for 4.5, 5 years. Three surgeries in a row, did my ACL, MCL, PCL, meniscus multiple times. I have no cartilage in my left knee, and it just got to the point where, every physician kind of was like, you know, I think maybe you probably need to tailor it back a little bit. And, you know, science has treated me well recently, but unfortunately I'm on the latter side of 30, so I don't necessarily see a comeback in my future.
Yeah, I myself, I'm 39. I only play rec league. It's kind of funny. Well, like I said, I play rec league in a neighboring town. Of course, not now due to the pandemic, obviously, which I'm missing. Which I know a lot of pickup game leagues are missing. But yeah, a lot of they go out there, and it's good seeing the passion for the game. Even you get off work, and then you put on your boots, and then you go play. But I mean, they play like Manchester United scouts are on the sidelines watching people. And, some of the older boys have to say, hey, we're just here to have a friendly kickabout. And, we admire and appreciate the passion, but, go easy. Because, there's a lot of guys, I'm one of the few that actually wears shin guards. Because, even when I started, playing pickup, a lot of these guys, they would go for the ball studs up. And these guys were just wearing low-cut socks and their cleats. And so you'd see a lot of bloody shins and a little pushing and shoving going on. And, obviously, this is pre-COVID. I can't imagine, what the fire in people is going to be, when they're able to get back on the pitch, wherever they are around the world. And, I mean, really, even the fans. Fans have got to be missing this. And I see you're one of the lead analysts for the USL Championship. Since their inception, I've had tickets or season tickets to the Charlotte Independence. Because I'm right down here, right outside Charlotte, North Carolina. I've actually done color commentary. Color commentary for some of their games in 2016. And I know teams are playing in, groups right now, groups of four or five. And do you think any fans are going to be allowed back in into the stands? I mean, I know Charlotte is not allowing anybody. I'm sure it's going to be up to, of course, local jurisdictions, elected officials, health officials. What do you think is going to happen, call it the next couple of weeks? Do you think we're going to see maybe a relaxation of the rules and starting letting in a few fans, or you think they're just going to be playing in front of empty houses?
It's a very good question. It's a very difficult one as well because it's loaded with so many variables. You're spot on in that some areas are allowing fans in. You get your Phoenix Rising in the Western Conference, Louisville City, of course, in the East. Two big names around the USL Championship. you know, the problem is the idea is, oh, if you let one in, you have to let them all in. That's not the case. So I think you do run into those instances where it's going to be based upon state jurisdiction. I'm really curious to see down the stretch in the playoff runs what the league does. I can tell you that hearing some rumblings behind the scenes, I would not be surprised if maybe there's a chance for this to be a common ground, maybe a neutral site hosting. I think some fans would probably turn their head and go, well, why would you do that and take fans away from the home market? Well, you just counter-argued your initial argument where, and not you, but the argument in general, where, you know, some fans aren't allowed any whatsoever. You know, some people are letting a couple season ticket holders in. Some aren't letting any in. So let's say, for instance, Orange County, you know, they're not letting fans in. So what if Orange County and the Western Conference find their way into the final and they're not letting fans in? Okay, well, if they're not letting fans in, what's the point to them if they play at a neutral ground or not? You know, I think if the league's smart, they either stick with what they're at right now, let it play its way out, and do what they've done in years past, where even if a team gets to the final and is hosting and isn't allowed to have fans, I think you bite the bullet and do it. You have to understand that you walk a fine line here with – remove politics for a second. You walk a fine line from a health standpoint of what people do and do not believe in. And the perception is very real of what could or could not be in terms of COVID. It's not my point to say what I feel, just kind of relaying what I hear behind the scenes. I do think that they will end up playing in front of fans. I'm not necessarily sure if you're going to see a full stadium. I think you'll probably get something along the lines of a 30% maximum capacity, you know, whether it's at a neutral ground or if they end up hosting, you know, a final in Phoenix, Orange County, you know, El Paso, Louisville, Indy, Pittsburgh, whoever ends up getting to the final, I think that's what you'll see. MLS is one that turns my head a little bit. I'm actually curious a bit more. You're good. Go ahead.
And I know a couple of weeks ago, you had your trial with the Seattle Sounders. I used to live in Seattle. I'm a diehard Seattle Sounders fan. I actually have the logo tattooed on my back, one of the most painful tattoos I've ever gotten. Well, they played down at RSL. The game ended in a 2-2 draw, but fans were in the stands. As you mentioned, it was maybe, I don't know if it was, 30% capacity. Of course, they did have the crowd shots, and everybody was masked up. But, they would have, say, groups of 5 people sitting next to each other, 10 people sitting next to each other. And they're like, okay, if you're not going to keep distance, then you're at least going to size. Because, you would think, that being the top league here in the States, Major League Soccer, that, they would say, okay, well, if this team's, City FC, the Red Bulls, FC Dallas, Seattle, if they can't host fans, then, you couldn't either. But, we mentioned, it's really going to be, I guess, up to the local, jurisdiction as to, certain parts of the country that may not be as affected by COVID-19 as others. But, yeah, I was surprised to see fans in the stands for that contest.
And remember, on the backside of this as well is – to one extreme or another, whether it be symptoms of that are considered flu-like, I can tell you this. I've had the flu as a player. I've had it recently as an adult. Regardless of how bad it gets me, if it actually affects my heart, if it affects my lungs, the flu affects you as a player. And even at this time of the year where teams are, in America, USL, MLS, League One teams, even at this time of year when teams are trying to make a playoff run, whether you get this at its minimalist form where you get a cough and maybe a mild fever and you're out for a couple days, or at its worst form where you're hospitalized, it's still affecting you, which means it's affecting your team, which means it's affecting the performance. You start to mess with the chemistry. All the results are going to start to go haywire. You don't want to put your athletes at risk either. And so that's why I think you've seen around the country, you've seen colleges, professional teams, even individual players either backing away from a situation in general or doing as much as possible to make sure that they are counteracting the environment so that they don't have to deal with all of these crazy situations. And it is great that you do have fans in certain areas. In other areas, I understand why there's not. Again, being an announcer, I don't always get the opportunity to express my opinion. I think with this one, having been on both sides where I'm a parent, you know, with a newborn and a wife who's, you know, getting her immune system back. So I understand that side of it. The other side of it, from the athlete side of me, says I want to play, I want to compete, I want to go win games. But I also understand that that body is a temple. And if anyone can tell you that you don't know how long your career is, I can tell you that. You know, I had a short career because of injuries. And what if you play devil's advocate, you let fans in, a player gets sick, and all of a sudden he's been put to pasture for the rest of the season because of something he picked up from the fans? You know, that could also go the other way, by the way, where he just, you let fans in and nothing happens. So I think there's an argument on both sides. I think this is where you let a club and a league say, listen, we'll give you the liberty to decide what you want to do. Obviously, they're going to have to deal with their board of governors. They're going to have to deal with the state legislature. And if they can get through it, if they want to, great. If not, good on them. I leave it up to them.
We're talking with Devin Kerr here on the Next Great Soccer Show. You can follow him on Twitter at DevinKerr9. And he's a former soccer player, lead analyst. I'm on your Twitter page now. It seems like you've covered just about everything. As you mentioned, the USL Championship, the Open Cup, NCAA soccer, CONCACAF. It just it seems like your career, your broadcasting career, you know, runs the gambit here in what you've covered. You mentioned a little while ago about you spent some time over in Germany, and we've seen a lot of young Americans going over there. Of course, Josh Sargent is still over there with Werder Bremen. Weston McKennie spent time over there with Schalke. He's now with Juventus. Obviously, Christian Pulisic for so long with Borussia Dortmund. What was, like, the general feeling? I mean, were Americans, I don't know if I should say as coveted. Did Germany have young Americans, like, on their radar when you played over there? Because it seems like, you know, that's kind of been a funneling ground, basically, from America to the Bundesliga. And in the case of, you know, of course, Christian Pulisic to Chelsea, is it kind of young Americans need to funnel through the Bundesliga before getting noticed from other top clubs around the world?
Very good question. Again, it's going to be multi-tiered. You know, the first part is that the United States major gap in coaching. Now, there are some really good coaches at the age groups that I'm going to talk about right now. But overall, the United States major gap in coaching usually occurs, and especially in terms of development for a player, usually occurs from age 17, 18 to about 22, 23. Why is that? Because our coaching isn't as good. Also, because the system's broken, where the United States started backwards. College soccer was always the one that reigned supreme back in the day. You know, I mean, you can go to guys that had ridiculous club and national team careers that never came up through any club that you've ever heard of. You know, the DA didn't exist. You know, Scott Gallagher was the biggest name back then. It's still a huge name in youth soccer now. But some of the bigger clubs around the United States didn't exist. So whether it was Indiana, Duke, University of Virginia, players like that, especially Virginia moving into the early 90s, they didn't have the upbringing that we did. But once even you started to move through that, guys had to make a decision where, okay, if you stayed in college, were you going to compete because you were told that Division I was what you wanted to go do? That's what I thought was right. I mean, I thought that, okay, I finished high school, sign on the dotted line, give me my scholarship and let's go. I was wrong. Now, college is good for some players. It's not right for everybody. And there are academies now, whether it's Loudoun, Seattle, where they get it right because, you know, they'll take players, and of course, Loudoun referencing DC United, they'll take players, they'll try and funnel them through. And if pushing them into their pro system isn't the right thing, maybe they sell them to another pro team. Maybe they push them into college. Maybe they keep them a little bit longer. There are a couple different avenues. And what works for a lot of Americans moving to Germany is because they can bridge that gap where that coaching system and their academies and their youth programs, they understand, even at the age of 18, which at that point in time over there, you're usually moving into a U18, U23, or a reserve team. They understand you're still at the age where they can grab you, bring you over, and start to put you under the tutelage of right people and get you back on track. Because at 19, 20 years of age, when you're going over there, if you are not in the ranks that I just talked about, the 23s or reserves or a number one, you know, first team, you are off track in their eyes. Because globally, you are behind. I mean, I'll never forget, I think I was 22 or 23 when I was over there. And I remember we did this game one day, just I have some fun, where they separated the older players from the younger players. I was on the older side, and I was 23, I think I was 23 years old, because, you know, the fourth division team was 16, 17, 18, 19, you know, the oldest player on the team, I think, was 27, because his career was either not really going anywhere. He was, you know, he was on the older side, or you know, they were waiting to try and sell him to another club. And so you get a lot of Americans that go over there and they find a way to continue your skill set. They instill what you've learned. They push you to another level, and then they keep you there. They sell you to another club. They ship you back to the United States. I mean, there's so many different avenues, just like in the United States, for these players to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what worked for me, you know, with Weston McKennie. I mean, he's living the dream, you know, a kid out of Little Elm, Texas. Kind of, you know, it's that one little city. It's kind of like Deuce, right? Out of Nacogdoches, Texas, that gets an opportunity and ends up playing in the Premier League. And, you know, a great star for the United States. Weston McKennie's on the same route. Christian Pulisic, you tossed his name now. Josh Sargent can throw his name into the mix. And so things are different now. I think what kids need to understand is a few things. One, if I get an opportunity, I'm leaving personally. Agree with that or not. I still think that the academy system and developmentally, it's better overseas. There are so many opportunities there compared to here where you can get a few coaches at the collegiate level that can get it done right, maybe 10 or 15. Outside of that, you're not developing to make yourself into a better professional. And I'll tell you what, a lot of coaches in the pro level as well will tell you the exact same thing.
Oh, most definitely. And, you know, looking, you know, at some other names, or young American names that are over there, obviously you got, you know, Gio Reyna. Yeah, he is basically running rampant over there at Dortmund. Tyler Adams, RB Leipzig. And, you know, those two, you know, just to name a few. And, you know, really getting to see them, you know, kind of hone their skills over there. You know, Jordan Morris. I believe he was at Werder Bremen for a while too, correct? Before coming back to Seattle?
Yeah, Jordan Morris is he's a fun one. And it all goes back to the German thing, right? How kind of all the bigger names, I'm not including myself in that argument, by the way, but how some of the bigger names end up over there. He was training over there. I don't know if it was with Werder Bremen. I remember him going overseas. But I know his career's primarily been with Seattle, and that's what he's been known for. National team, of course. But he's a fun one for me because he's a kid who he kind of did both, right? Like he did the youth academy with Seattle, and he was from Washington. I can't remember what city, but you know he's from the Pacific Northwest. Seattle owns all the rights up there, so they scoop him up. But he still goes to college. You know, he played under Jeremy Gunn, which is a fantastic collegiate coach at Stanford for the Cardinal, and. You know, he finished his school and says, you know what, I think I'll make a run at this thing and jumps out. And then from there it was, okay, after my all worldly event, you know, I'm going to go to the Sounders. And so the Sounders get him. That's awesome. And that's kind of what it was. Again, I vaguely remember him being at Bremen. I feel like it might've been one other club, but Bremen was probably right when he came out of school, which again, I'm doing most of this off of my head. So fans, I apologize. Maybe 2016, 2017. Actually it might've been 15 or 16, but you know, he's one where Jeremy Gunn's one of the coaches, like his coaching style or not, he gets it. He is old school English, but kind of fuses some of the German style playing in him where he wants his team to be a machine. And the great thing about the German game, which I love for our American players, is they make you do everything at the simplest manner, and then all the hard things kind of come easier to you. And that sounds kind of contradicting, but it's speed up the game, speed up your thought process, but you're not doing anything crazy from a skill set standpoint. You know what I mean? And so, you know, we have such talented players in the United States, high IQs that can play. And the game is starting to figure that out. It's taken quite some time, at least in packs, for people to go over. But, you know, you mentioned Jordan Boris. There are plenty of guys. Sneaky Pete Marino was a guy in the mid-90s people have probably never heard of. Look up Pete Marino. Played in the MLS, played overseas. Eric Eichmann was over there. Corey Gibbs, who's turned into a great agent, you know, he was over at St. Pauli when I was at Altona and HSV. And, you know, these are names that probably aren't household names to everybody, but they've been going over there for a long time. So the path has been set. It's just now, you know, whether it's clubs here or clubs over there, they're figuring out how to get these American players over there, get them at the right age and make them more successful.
Talking with Devin Kerr here on the Next Great Soccer Show right here on Blog Talk Radio. Well, the English Premier League is back underway. A lot of people are saying Man City is going to be making another run at the championship over current title holders Liverpool. Who do you like over in England this season?
Well, I can tell you this much. On my left bicep, I've got "You'll Never Walk Alone" tattooed on me. So that gives you an idea of exactly how I feel about the upcoming season. No, you know what? I think it's going to be one of the better seasons that we've seen. You know, Manchester City is always going to be a threat. They're a very deep team. Anyone that has Pep Guardiola at the helm, I don't even care if it's a high school team that has the worst players in the country, I'm going to be worried about them. Pep Guardiola is one of my favorite managers and could go down as, in my opinion, one of the best, if not the best managers of all time. They've done a little bit of work in the offseason, nothing crazy. Yeah. Chelsea have made a massive amount of moves, and I think people are keen to go, wow, they had a crazy transfer window and this, that, and the other. I'm all for who they picked up, but also realize they're coming off a transfer ban. So, you know, yes, of course, they got Pulisic, but it's not exactly like they've had the ability to sign a boatload of players over the past couple of seasons. So I applaud them for the work that they've put in. They are probably on paper the most improved team. You know, we'll see how results pan out. Liverpool, being a massive Liverpool fan, knowing all the players that are in the club, I'm happy with where we're at. Would I have liked to see more? Yeah, I still want another striker, and I still want a big center back next to Virgil van Dijk. But I'm excited to see Leeds. I'm a huge fan. We talked about managers a second ago. I'm a huge fan of Marcelo Bielsa. I have been for years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you get the opportunity, go watch their documentary. I believe it's on Amazon. Amazon and, you know, of course, Netflix dominate everything for the footballing documentaries. But he's a guy who brings high intensity, pressure, press, pace. They want to go after games, but they also have the technical ability to slow it down and push it around. And, you know, that's kind of what Liverpool brings to the Premier League. You see it here and there from Manchester City at times. I'm really excited for what is to be. I'm a little bit worried about Man United. You know, they're a global brand that has slipped over the past couple of years. Having experienced that as a Liverpool fan in the, you know, early teens, if you will, right after pretty much the 14, I think it was 14 when we finished second off Gerrard's slip, whenever the run was, the bad years kind of dwell together, unfortunately. But, you know, the early, you know, 4 or 5 years there, Liverpool fell off and we just became this ragtag bunch that, you know, couldn't really find our way. Manchester United seemed that they're there now and they have some really world-class players, but didn't really make any big splashes in the offseason. Jadon Sancho from Borussia Dortmund was a heavy target that they weren't able to pick up. Timo Werner was rumored as well for Liverpool, mm-hmm. but of course he ends up at Chelsea. So a lot of players that could have, might have, didn't. Jose Mourinho at Tottenham, is he going to get a healthy Harry Kane? I think there's a lot of questions to be asked, but I go back to one of my opening statements. For me, the 2021 season, given the fact that there's not going to be this stop-start nature, at least knock on wood, for me, it's probably going to be one of the better ones we've seen in a while.
How do you think Thiago Alcantara is going to – how do you think he's going to adjust to life at Anfield?
I love him. I love him for a multitude of reasons. Number one, he's a player that's coming off a pretty impressive season with Bayern Munich. You know, you're not getting someone who exactly rode the bench, of course. You know, you're looking at one of the better midfielders for Munich. And understanding what Hans Dieter wanted and changing managers, a couple of them, he understands what it's like to switch systems. He understands what it's like to have that depth being at such a storied club in Bayern. But he also has the confidence of regularly playing, and he pushes himself in a group of players like that. So I have no problem with him stepping into the system, and I think he'll do just fine. I'm curious as to what will happen in some of the people around him. You know, will we keep Gini Wijnaldum? You know, rumors of him going to join Barcelona. Jeez.
Is it Real Madrid that are looking at him?
No, he's going to Barcelona. My apologies. You know, because of the Dutch aspect and their manager. Yeah, the manager they picked up. But Ronald Koeman, you know, there's been a bunch of turmoil in the front office of Barcelona, which is where I think Gini Wijnaldum won't go, which I think suits the style better for Thiago because he is also a player that's going to need to learn and learn about the guys around him. So if you look at a James Milner, a Jordan Henderson, Thiago, Fabinho, now you have a really deep midfield that we didn't have the luxury of a few years ago. Of course, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain can throw his name into the hat. So things have gotten better there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm worried about – I still go back to – and most clubs around the world would kill to have a front three and Mo Salah, Sadio Mane, and Roberto Firmino. But we've also proven that when one of them drops off, it's difficult for us to regularly produce if it's not all three on the pitch. That scares me as a fan.
Right.
It scares me as, you know, what does that look like running forward? So I would like a nine, and I would like, as I mentioned, another center back next to Virgil van Dijk. I think we have a Band-Aid there that isn't always tugged at, but it's still a wound that's open, and it does concern me in the long run.
I think it's important that you have you'll never walk alone tattooed on your left arm, where I have right shoulder. So as a Liverpool fan, you're in much better shape in the Premier League as my West Ham Hammers are, of course. All the, you know, the GSB out and all the fans hating on, of course, the owners and the rest of the board. So, yeah. You guys will be sitting up there at the top, whereas I think we'll be hovering just above relegation this year. If we're lucky, of course, West Ham falling 2-0 to Newcastle last Saturday. So going into the second phase of the MLS season, do you like going down the stretch? We'll start in the East. Who do you like in the East?
Philly. Always a fan of Philly. I am impressed by what Orlando City has done and their turnaround there, but I like Jim Curtin's squad. I haven't always been on his side in terms of coaching style, but ever since Ernst Tanner came over, they switched their formation a little bit. They tailored their strategy to their academy a bit differently, knowing what the system looks like from top to bottom. And I'm talking, you know, Philadelphia Union, formerly Bethlehem Steel, now Philadelphia Union 2, Reading, YSC mm-hmm. Academy, Philadelphia Union Youth Programs, understanding everything that goes into it. I know how they achieve success at all of those levels, and you really are starting to see that matriculate into their squad on a regular basis. We had seen players get in there, but now you're seeing the actual results. You know, you'd seen, you know, McKenzie on the back line jump in there before. You know, Brendan Aaronson is a big name that everybody likes to talk to. But they've also done well in the transfer windows where you get Jacob Gleznyk, Kasper Schabilko last year. Olivier Baizo is another player they brought in that primarily spent two seasons at Bethlehem, now Philadelphia Union too. But so they figured out how to get the youth involved, and they get results, and they're doing it against quality teams. Now the key question is going to be is when you're up against the big boys. You know, they lost to Portland in MLS's back. Portland, of course, goes on to win. That looks like a good loss to them, but, you know, can you win the big games? In the past, they haven't really been able to do it, but I still like their form. I think they're a very good team. It'd be hard not to talk about Columbus as well. Caleb Porter's a quality coach. You know, I thought their performance against Chicago Fire the other night was somewhat abysmal for the better portion of 60 minutes of a match. Of course, some of that was floating in and out. But again, great teams find ways to salvage points. And, you know, when you're backed up against the wall on the road, can you do that? 22 minutes to go, and they do it. You know, Fatai gets in. Jazzy Zardes gets in. My buddy Tyler Terrens is the play-by-play voice for the Chicago Fire, and he and I were going over what the match was, and he said, what do you think? And I kind of gave him my thoughts, and he was like, man, I couldn't tell you how frustrating it was being on air because I saw the greatness from Chicago. We get the 2-0 lead. You know, they decide to back off a little bit, and Columbus Crew makes them pay, and that's the mark of great teams. And so those are my two picks in the East.
Who do you like in the West?
West is more tricky for me. It's hard to bet against Bob Bradley and LAFC. You know, they've shown you that they're up and down for sure. Of course, things are regionally based, so they're seeing some similar teams. But, you know, phase two, what is that going to look like? You expect them to eventually beat Galaxy. They haven't done that. You expect them with their lineup to beat an RSL on the road. We saw that recently. That didn't happen. But then they recover after two losses, and they take down Portland Timbers. So that's a good look. I don't want to bet against LA Galaxy. I'm a big fan of Adrian Heath. I love what he's done at Minnesota United every single year. They're not reloading. Their chemistry's good. They keep quality veteran players in there. They bring in good collegiate players, loan them to get experience if need be. You know, and they find a way to get results. I like the talent that they brought in a couple years ago, and they've kept them, and some of those guys that they're doing in the offseason. And I'm still not sold on Sporting Kansas City. I don't know what it is. It's something that when I watch them, I enjoy their play, but there's a fluidity that is not the Sporting Kansas City that we saw in, you know, 17 and 18, that where they were so good. mm-hmm. even 16, where, you know, they made those runs, the Open Cup runs. Of course, they did well in MLS, and it's just not what it is. So, you know, probably two unpopular picks. I went 1-2 in the East. In the West, I'm picking 3, and I think LAFC is sitting 5th or 6th right now. I know Minnesota's at 3, but I don't remember the goal differential with or how the tiebreaker is with Galaxy. But, yeah, I'd probably take Minnesota and LAFC. They always seem to get better. And if history shows us that, you know, last year they got better as the season went on, Minnesota definitely made a run both in the Open Cup and the playoffs. And LAFC, you know, they're one of the best teams in MLS, even if they aren't playing like it right now.
One game I enjoyed, well, of course, as a Seattle fan, anyone would enjoy that, was the 7-1 thumping of San Jose Earthquakes.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think Seattle was just firing on all cylinders that night? I know San Jose just threw the other night, I think it was either last night or the night before, with Portland, 1-1 with Portland Timbers. What happened to San Jose right there? I mean, you know, they've got, you know, Matias Almeida's coach. You know, he's, you know, very, you know, well-known, really the world over. What do you think happened to San Jose in that game right there?
There's a couple different opinions. Number one, a pretty decent amount of rotation. That system makes you really push your body to the brink. And I don't think people understand it. And mind you, most people have never played in the system that is Matias Almeida. So let's get that out of the way. But you come mm-hmm. off team morale being a little bit low. If I'm not mistaken, I know they had lost two games prior. I don't know if there was one in between or not, but I know they lost back-to-back games against LA Galaxy and LAFC. And it was rough games where, you know, they were out in front twice. Galaxy came back to beat them at the end. That's hard as a player. And even with rotation, you deal with the same thing. LAFC thumped them, basically just like Seattle Sounders did. And so you've got team morale that's down a little bit. You have to deal with the fact that you're on the road. I know that all three of those games were on the road. I don't remember if there was another one in between, so my apologies. But all three of those games were on the road. Travel is difficult as a player. Jumping time zones, it's never an easy thing. And you go into that. Player rotation, chemistry, the system, it's a perfect storm. And Seattle Sounders look good. Any time that you score, I think it was five goals in the opening 40 minutes, if I'm not mistaken. I turned it off just before halftime. So five goals in the opening 40 minutes, you know, you kind of wake up in the morning and go, 7? Jesus, really? But it's a combination
and they scored their 6th and 7th goals within the first 15 minutes in the second half.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, done and dusted, right? I mean – anytime, it's a perfect
definitely.
Storm. Things roll up against each other. I don't think that in the long run, it's weird with San Jose. They show you so many good glimpses. They struggled at MLS's back, of course, but they show you so many good glimpses. And then at the same point in time, you kind of turn your head sometimes and go, how are they losing 4-0? You know, they'll run a team into the ground and rock a team. Like, I remember the comeback victory at MLS's back against Vancouver. That was awesome. But it was kind of like they were quiet for 40 minutes of that match. That Seattle game was crazy. Do you remember the opening 25, 30 minutes of that Sounders game in MLS's back, the opening game? That was,
I do.
You kind of looked to your head and went, this could be a 5-5 game. And it was 0-0. And so that's what that's what San Jose do to you. It's the Quakes. In the long term, I think Matias Almeida will continue to grow with that system. It was a bad look, of course, but he's going to get the players he wants. Remember, he's only 2 years in. And people think that results are going to come right away. They don't. And it's a process, and it's really difficult in this day and age because fans want results, and results drive the business. But if you have a club that buys into what they believe in, which is Matias Almeida, man-marking at times, and it goes so much more deeper than that, they'll be good. Not fine. They'll be good in the long run. It may not be this year, but I promise you, they will be a force to be reckoned with in the next couple seasons.
I definitely agree with you on that one. Okay, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here. You heard it here first, folks. Devin Kerr, what are your predictions for MLS Cup?
Oh. Well, here's the problem. Here's my question. What are we – what's the format going to be? Has Don Garber decided where he's going to let them play? What's going to happen here? That's one of the issues I have. Okay.
I don't think
I'll remove
yet.
All
I'm
of
not,
the variables.
Not seeing or heard anything.
No, they haven't. I'm poking fun a little bit. I'll remove all the variables. I'm just going to pick one team from each, and I'll go with it. I think this is the year that the Philadelphia Union get back to it. I'll take the Union, and I'll take Minnesota United. Those are my two in MLS Cup, and I will take Minnesota United for the title.
That would be an incredible game.
Oh, yeah.
Now that
I'm just
thinking about it, and as a Sounders fan, that's a thorn in my heel to hear that, you know, that my Sounders wouldn't be back in it. But, I can definitely agree with that one. Minnesota, Philly. I do have family right outside the Philadelphia area, so going on those two teams that you chose, I would go Philly, just so my brother-in-law, who's a diehard Philadelphia Eagles fan, finally gets to celebrate the Super Bowl. I don't think he's a big soccer fan, but he get into it after should Philly win MLS Cup. Well, Devin Kerr, thank you so much for joining us here on the Next Great Soccer Show. Before I let you go, let the listeners know how they can follow you and get in touch with you.
Feel free to yell at me. Do whatever you want, David. Tell the fans as well. Twitter at Devin Kerr 9. Instagram, DVNKRR. I throw a little bit of everything in there. Every now and then we'll throw you behind the scenes. You can catch my newly minted son and all the BS that he brings to my life, but in a good way. And David, just like to say, appreciate the opportunity, buddy, for having me on. Anytime I get the chance, I'd be beyond grateful. It was a real joy.
Thank you so much, Devin. Yeah, we would love to have you back here on the Next Great Soccer Show. And congratulations on the new baby. I've been an uncle for a year now. My sister and the brother-in-law I was just talking about, or her husband, they had their daughter September 20th of last year. So I've yet to see the baby because, again, they're in Delaware and I'm here in North Carolina. So I haven't been able to make the trek up the East Coast to visit. But, again, congratulations. And thank you so much for being a guest here on the Next Great Soccer Show. We'd love to have you back sometime in the near future.
Thanks, brother. Consider it done anytime. Best of luck.
Thank you, Devin. Well, thank you so much, fans, for tuning in for another episode of the Next Great Soccer Show here on Blog Talk Radio. We've been talking with Devin Kerr, soccer analyst and former soccer player. So, again, we thank him so much for coming on the show today. Going to have some more shows coming up in the near future. Going to have some great guests. So, definitely stay tuned to the page. Again, this is Dave Hodges with the Next Great Soccer Show here on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I'll see you next time.